All right, so I want to talk about Pursume Nisa, and then, you know, try to get some insight from there into Dalakosos, which is the mitzvah coming up that has Pursume Nisa. Right, so the Gemara has Pursume Nisa recorded by three different mitzvahs, so three different miracles, right? Namely, Dalakosos with Pesach, Megillas Esther with Purim, and most famously, near Hanukkah with Hanukkah. So before evaluating what their specificity is all about, step one is we got to ask like a really obvious question, which is do we only have Pursume Nisa for these three mitzvos, right? We could ask that about different mitzvos that seem like miracle related. For example, Sukkah will probably be like our consistent foil throughout tonight as an example of a mitzvah that seems related to a miracle, right? Assuming it's the Anani HaKavod, and even if it's not the Anani HaKavod per se, but the general Hashem miraculously taking care of us in the desert. And yet, it doesn't seem like there's Pursume Nisa in the mitzvah of Sukkah. Rabbi Yochum Fishel Perlow is an Acharon who thinks that there is, but he's in the strong minority. The preponderance of the evidence is that we've only got Pursume Nisa for the mitzvos associated with Purim, Pesach, and Hanukkah. So why is that the case? And furthermore, what about all the miracles in Jewish history that don't have any mitzvos associated with them at all? Right? I mean, you know, you go through, you flip through, like pick a parak of Tanakh at random, and the odds are not so bad that you're going to come up with some major nace. And why don't we have an obligation to be mifarsim those nisim? But we do have an obligation to be mifarsim the nisim of Pesach, Purim, and Hanukkah. So right away off the bat, we're going to try to develop some distinguishing principles, right? Some ways to figure out what's unique about these three miracles per se, and then we can dive into them a little bit more. So I don't know if you guys got to see any of the sources that I sent out, but it'll be useful if you have the source quotes open that I sent. And we'll just go through some of them. I'll try to go through them quickly. The first one that I have is the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Yud Ches. Shulchan Aruch here is talking about what are the requirements for the bracha? If you see a certain, if you see a place where a miracle was done for Bnei Yisrael, so there's a nace you're supposed to say. It's a sigyon bracha staff nun dalid, and the red bracha you say is sherasa nisim la, you know, Bnei Yisrael makom hazeh, something like that. Right, the exact text. Sherasa nisim lavosinu, yeah, right. Sherasa nisim lavosinu ba makom hazeh. What do you say? Bracha tashal kim achalam. Sherasa nisim lavosinu ba makom hazeh. Kind of reminiscent of the bracha we say on the Chanukiah and on the Megillah, right? Shasanis Lavasino, you know, Bayamim Mahim was one of Zahir, Shasanis Lavasino, Bamakom Hazah. So kind of familiar, kind of similar. So the Shulchan Aruch gives, this is basically a list from a brisa in Brachos. Some of these may not look familiar, and that's because they're not, and the Gemara, when it goes through each one of these, you know, says, what is this, what is this, what is this? But if you look at the first few, so the examples are pretty clear, right? Ma'abros Hayam is the crossing of the sea, right? If you know where exactly Yam Suf was split, Ma'abros Hayardin, right? If you know where the Jordan River is split. Right? Ma'abros Nachlein Arnon, not sure what those are. Avne Algabish, that we say is where in that random Shira you've got in Parshas Chukas, right, where all of a sudden there's like, you know, in the middle there's like three psukim of Shira, we're not sure what's going on. We say it's because the Edomites were ambushing Bnei Yisrael in the two caves, right? The Bnei Yisrael were going to go through the mountain pass, they were going to come from both sides, and Hashem had the two mountains, right, come together, shmush the Edomites, so they're destroyed, and then Bnei Yisrael see the running blood, and they realize the miracle, and then they burst out into Shira. And so, right, then the if you see the mountain that Og wanted to throw onto Bnei Yisrael, you see the rock that Moshe sat on when they were fighting Amalek, right, so all these different, hey, what's the last one? How do you like that? Right, so the last one in the sermon is, if you see the walls of Yericho, So all these you make a blessing of Shas Nisan Lavasina Bamakom Hazah. And then the Shulchan Aruch says in the next simon, Al Nation Aselik Sas Yisrael Kolzwan Shalonasel Chol Yisrael Aruban Ein Mevarchan Alav. Right. So distinction number one is whether the miracle was performed for the benefit of the majority of Kol Yisrael or only the minority. Right, and that's there's a halachic difference there. If the majority of Bnei Yisrael experienced the miracle, then we will make this bracha. If only the minority, then that's not the case. So that, for example, would explain to us why there's no Pursumei Nisa for, Eliyahu Behar Carmel, right? Or, you know, any of the miracles that Elisha performs. Elisha performs, more than a dozen miracles, and none of them have any Pursumei Nisa. So the answer why, okay, great, right? The answer is very simple. Those maybe don't, if they're not going to make the standard of having the bracha of Sha'asa Nisa Avasinu B'makom Hazeh, then perhaps they're not Pursumei Nisa eligible either. But yet, right, so that gets us part of the way there. But it doesn't get us all the way there in two respects. Respect number one is, what about all these outstanding miracles we've got right here in the Shulchan Aruch, right? How come of these, the only one that's at all referenced at all is Ma'abros Hayam, the very first one, right? Connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. None of the other ones have any Pursumei Nisa aspect. Why shouldn't we be obligated to publicize any of these miracles? And second of all, what unique, in other words, we can figure out what the miracles have in common, but we got to figure out why that's significant, right? So those are kind of the two outstanding questions we've got. Yeah, Yoni.
How objective, I say in this case, the placement of the miracles. How objectively do we have to know for a fact the miracle happened there, and it's sufficient if we think we know when the miracle happened?
In the Sigya and Brachos, it seems like they just had, like, traditional knowledge as to where these were.
A factor of, like, you've reached the point, and therefore because you reached a place where something significant, therefore that place requires a bracha, so to speak, to appreciate it? Or it's more of, like, a personal thing where I should personally appreciate the fact that historically there's been something that affects me?
I'm not sure I understand you.
And then is it a point of, like, the place itself is now a significant place for Klal Yisrael? Or is it that I need to appreciate the history, and therefore, if I somehow, if I'm learning also, there has to be a certain criteria or bar for you have to cross, for which you now have to make a bracha. But if I, could theoretically learn so much about this miracle that I could reach that threshold, then I would also make that bracha. As long as I appreciate it, that's what matters, as opposed to reaching some objective criteria for having reached a specific location, where the location matters.
It's in the context of Berkos HaRe'iyah. So, right, the category of brachas we're talking about is a bracha upon seeing.
Yeah, but you're still part of, like, shevach of some sort, or da.
Yeah, but what's the trigger, though? Like a bracha on lightning is a bracha shevach, but, you create a PhD thesis on lightning and you still can't make a bracha on it, right?
Okay, but that's just a question of the threat. It could be a whole question like to the threshold. Then there just could be like a technical issue of like you have to see it in order to really appreciate it in a certain way.
I'm not really sure.
And in the context of the bracha Pirsumei Nisa, are we dealing with the question of the placement, the place itself matters, or is it more in the history of Klal Yisrael that this
right now, all I'm trying to figure out is why, out of the 1,000 miracles in Tanakh and beyond, we're only picking 3. So I'm just trying to find anywhere in Halacha any way that we can distinguish between groups of miracles. Like, the distinction we're making right now isn't one that's focused on Pursumei Nisa per se.
Yeah, I got it.
Now I have a model for a difference between two different types of miracles. I'm not sure what else.
All right.
There's no kedusha of the place, right? I mean, Yericho is probably the best proof of that because Yericho, it's cursed or forbidden from rebuilding it.
All right,
place itself kind of significant. But yeah, in other words, it's they're going to say at the end of Maggid, right? You seeing it you know, that just presents an obligation of probably more hoda than shavach, I would think, but I don't know if there's such a difference between those two. But anyway, right, so that's where we're standing right now. We're part of the way there, but there's still more to do. So you have these this Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah, and you have this tshuva from the Rami Rodenberg, which kind of drive at the same point. Rabbeinu Yonah here is focusing on the mitzvah of halal. Gemara also has Pursumi Nisa associated with halal. And he quotes Rabbeinu Tam as explaining what the mitzvah of halal is all about. And he says, "Sheikar ha-halal niskan al kol tzar v'tzara shalo tabu ala tzibur." That's a like sone yisrael. Shalo tabu ala tzibur means it did fall on the tzibur. Right? So there was some any crisis that happened to the community. Shebashah shehay l'kol yisrael tzara. Right? There was a crisis for the entire nation. Right? L'kol yisrael tzara. V'hayah kadosh baruch hu osei imahem nes. Hayu osim yom tov, v'hayu omrim hala. V'hayu chayev levarech al kriyasa. Right, so that's the archetypical halal with a bracha, which is said on a nes, is the halal where all of Bnei Yisrael faced a certain crisis, and Hashem stepped in and saved them from it. Right, if you think, what's the classic holiday which represents this form of halal?
Purim. There's no halal.
So, yeah, Purim, we got to talk about why not, and we'll get that conversation in a second. The one that does have the halal is... Definitely. Those two. Pesach and Hanukkah. Pesach, the halal, which we're going to have the halal Haggadah at the Seder. And then Hanukkah, where the entire, that's what the entire
Yom Tov is about. What's the Tzara and Pesach?
What?
What's the Tzara for Pesach?
We're
going to die.
What?
We were slaves. We would have lived a happy life, miserable life as slaves.
He's killing the firstborn.
Yeah.
He's always killing firstborn children. Like, that was like a constant reality forever. Yeah. Like,
no, we were in...
We could have lived there forever.
Doesn't even do a Tzara.
We would have been Anu Vonenu, Mishubadim, like, Lefar, Rishayim, right nowadays.
Right, exactly, okay.
So we would have been fine.
And many of us would have been... Well, first of all,
not fine, we've been miserable, but...
At the Yom Suf, we would have... We could have been killed. And, yeah, I mean, come on. There's no... He doesn't say anywhere... Does the Tzara have to be... Look.
The Nes of Hanukkah wasn't necessarily physical destruction, right? There also, it was a spiritual salvation. You would have had the destruction of the nations from a spiritual perspective in Hanukkah, right? That's the classic distinction between Hanukkah and Purim.
That's really the only good example. But...
Unless you
bring... Hanukkah was like that kind of... It kind of declined until it reached a point. As opposed to Pesach, where it's kind of just like a constant, and then we get saved. Unless it can be drashim of like, oh, we reached the 49th level of Tumah, and then like those midrashim that like seem to also point in the direction of like declining to reach like this like point of like we have to get saved or else too late. But like otherwise, Pesach is like very stagnant, and like we could have been saved anytime. We could have been saved at that year. We could have been saved 200 years later. We could have been saved a million years later. It wouldn't have made a difference.
Okay, I don't care about the time. I care about the fact that God saves
us. It's not like a thorough.
If someone walks into the room and if someone makes a clap on the beam in shul and says, "I want to announce to the congregation, I want to let everybody know, this is a public education moment. You should just know that God saved the Israelites from Egypt." So I don't think anybody would, tell them you're wrong. They tell them you're wasting our time.
Okay, my point is it's not a sorrow though in the same way.
Okay, I disagree with you. I don't know if Chai Lahara Sasatsuma, maybe you experienced slavery different from me when you reenacted every year. But I think of it as a profound crisis, physically, spiritually, the whole deal. So that's and then Rabbeinu Tam has a pasuk at the end, right? Tachsiv, where is he getting this from? This is the second to last line. Ki savo milchama ba'artzachem al hatzar hatzorer eschem baharosem v'gomer. Right, so when there is a war comes on your borders, or an enemy is assaulting you, and then Hashem saves you, and then you praise Hashem. Right, that's how the rest of the pasuk works. So Rabbeinu Tam is focusing again on the distinction between community and individual. Right, he's emphasizing Kol Yisrael.
But he's adding something else in here, that specifically where you have a certain tsara coming from an outside force, and we're being saved from it by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Likewise, the next source is Tshuva the Maharam. The Maharam is dealing with an issue that we'll get more into later on in greater depth, which is the concept of Af Hein Hayu Be'osa Hanes, right, which the Gemara uses to obligate women in the performance of Dalet Kosos, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah. We'll have to figure out how and why. We'll do that later. But at any rate, so Maharam is being asked, why do we only have Af Hein Hayu Be'osa Hanes for these three? And around there says, Lo Shayach Taimud Af Hein Hayu Elahecha de Hamitzvah Ba Al Hanes She'ir Li Yisrael Shehayu B'Sakana V'Nimlatu. They were in danger and they were saved. Dumya de Megillah V'Dalet Kosos V'Ner Chanukah. Right, they were in danger, they were saved. That is parallel to Megillah, Dalet Kosos, and Ner Chanukah. That could knock out Sukkah, because Sukkah, right, so we would have been in big trouble in the desert, but it wasn't trouble from an outside threat. It's not that Hashem saved us from an outside force. Hashem just, you know, through his kindness, helped us out in the desert.
He says Sukkah is an outside force.
What?
He says Sukkah is an outside force. Or Sar is an outside force.
Tsara being an outside force, that's explicit. That's the problem with me quoting one line from a longer tshuva. So now we've kind of gotten to stage two, right? So A, potentially, maybe a miracle that only applies to, that was only relevant to a majority of Klal Yisrael. B, maybe it has to be a certain tsara from which we were saved. So we still need to go a little bit beyond that and just kind of sharpen and figure out what is going on here. So I'll tell you, I had this idea by myself, and then after I developed it and tried to find proofs for it, I saw that Rav Moshe Lichtenstein says the exact same thing. So part of me was like really happy, and part of me was really annoyed because I thought it was a really good idea, and like he literally said the same thing, and he wrote the article before me, so he gets the credit for it. In case you're interested in reading the article, they have, like, I think, it's been a long time since I looked, but I think they have a condensed version in English on the VBM. In Hebrew, it's in this, it's a really nice sefer that YU put out about 15 years ago. There was Shaul Meshev in YU who was, by all accounts, a very warm and knowledgeable person. Suffered from diseases since he was like at a very young age, never got married, went blind early in his life, and apparently was very into like Hanukkah was his passion. So he passed away at a relatively young age, and he wasn't well his whole life. And when he passed away, they put out this sefer. His name was Rav Yosef Winevsky. They put out this book called Zecher Kesonas Yosef, and in there they had a bunch of Divrei Torah, particularly on Hanukkah, because that really was what spoke to him. So Rav Moshe has an article in that volume on Pursu Minisa, and in there he's got like 7 pages where he draws out this theory. So let's look at a few more of the sources. The basic idea, and I'll tell you an advanced idea, and then I'll try to prove it with all three, is if you think about Pesach, Purim, and Chanukah, right, which those are three where we have Pursu Minisa on the books. So there's no question that they fit each of the two criteria that we've seen so far in the Halacha and Rishonim, generally making distinctions between miracles in different contexts, right? Number one, there's no question that Purim, Chanukah, and Pesach apply to Rove of the Tzibor. Now maybe, just totally parenthetically, Yavo HaMakshe V'Yekshe, what about Chanukah technically is a minority of the Tzibor, if we assume that most of the Jews are still safe in Babylon. But we would answer from way back the idea that the real community is in Eretz Yisrael, right? So that that's not going to phase us. But so assuming that the majority of the Tzibor was in danger in all three of those situations, and it was from outside powers, and Hashem stepped in and saved us miraculously. But it seems like there's still more going on. Like, why is that what exactly is obligating these three to have a notion of person? So the idea seems to be, if you look at all three, you see that it's not only that Hashem saves us and we just sit there and do nothing and then move on. You've got two different salient factors following the Nais. Number one, there's the Nais, and then B'nai Yisrael take a step forward of their own. Right? So in other words, we are not passive. We're passive for the miracle, but we don't react passively to the miracle. We react actively to the miracle in a way of, you know, reaching out towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And B, coming out of that nace and our reaction to it in the aftermath is, you could call a bris chadash, right? Rav Moshe, he talks about that all the time, right? There's a new bris, a new covenant. There's been an update in the relationship between between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. And what Pirsumei Nisa is all about is remembering, publicizing, thanking, celebrating, commemorating the miracles that brought this that brought about the, you know, refreshing of the bris between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. If you look at, you know, the history of Karban Pesach in Tanakh, from Yehoshua through Chizkiyahu and Yoshiyahu, so the Yantif of Pesach and the Karban Pesach was constantly used as a it was the mitzvah associated with updating the bris. I don't use updating the bris, of you know, renewing the bris. So let's look, you know, at you know, probably the easiest one. I don't, there are no marmakomos for it because Hanukkah is kind of giant marmakomos. But Hanukkah, the question of what we did is obvious, right? As soon as the miracle happens, the first thing we do is we run into the base of Mikdash, right? You know, the first opportunity we have as soon as the Greeks are out. So, you know, priority number one for the Hashmonaim is not setting up a government, not, you know, figuring out how we're gonna you know, tax people or set up a, you know, national library system. It's, we're gonna, you know, run into the base of Mikdash, matar the base of Mikdash, and restart the process of Karbanos. And that, you know, and then you've got after that, right? So you've got the miracle of the war. Then you've got us with being matar the base of Mikdash, and then that's confirmed, right, with the capstoning Nes Pacha Shaman, right? And that's, you know, setting Bnei Yisrael off for the next two, as the Rambam says, right, the next 200 years of political independence, and that's really the nace that the last nace going off with us to Galus, right? Like the Haftarah we read last week, if Malachi is, you know, the last Nevuah signing off the period of Nevuah, so, you know, the nace of Hanukkah is the last nace, you know, kind of signing us off as before we go off into the Galus, right? There's the last shining moment we're going to have and to take with us out on our way. Let's not spend too much time on Hanukkah. Purim, you've got more meat in the way of the marmakomos. You see this both just in the pshat of the pesukim and in the expansion from Chazal, right? Parak Tes in Megillas Esther, but by now the narrative is finished, and now it's all about the creation and acceptance of you know, of Chagah Purim. So there are two themes that come across very clearly in the letters. Remember, two letters have to be sent out, right? Mordechai sends out a letter, and it doesn't really seem to take. And then Esther sends out a letter, and Bnei Yisrael seem like they're more responsive to Esther's letter than they were to Mordechai's. So that's, again, a conversation in and of itself. The two themes that the Megillah seems to stress throughout this process, you know, detailing the development and creation of Purim, number one is Kol HaYehudim. You see this over again, right? Kol HaYehudim were under threat. Kol HaYehudim were the recipients of the letters from Mordechai and Esther. And Kol HaYehudim, all the Jews are accepting, you know, the day of Purim upon themselves. So the stressor number one is Kol HaYehudim. Chav Zayin, you even have, right, this is the famous pasuk, Kimu v'kibla Yehudim, alayhem v'alzaram, al kol hanovim alayhem, right? So the Jews are accepting it upon them, all of us, all of our descendants, and any future Geirim, right? The Megillah says that the time of Esther was a peak time for Geiris, right? People wanted to join Bnei Yisrael at that time. So anybody who's associated, tangentially associated, future generations, we're stressing that everybody is involved in the acceptance of Purim. And theme number two is the idea of Kimu v'Kiblu, right? You have a few times in here. L'kayim aleihem, Kimu v'Kiblu. Probably another one or two that I can't see right now because I didn't underline everything. But that it's being accepted by Bnei Yisrael. This is the first new Chag basically ever, right? Is there, when was the last new Chag pre-Purim? I mean, It's the first new chag ever. So that is a groundbreaking, right? If we're talking about Bnei Yisrael's response to the Neis, so Bnei Yisrael don't sit there on the sidelines. Bnei Yisrael react by creating a new day. And you could say that it's a top-down movement, right? Because it's coming from Mordechai and Esther forcing it upon Bnei Yisrael. But it's clear that Pasuk Kav Zayin makes it clear that the acceptance, the ultimate acceptance of it, was a fully engaged and proactive one, right? The pasuk could have just said kayak, you know, kiyamu. The pasuk could have just said kiblu. The pasuk instead says kimu v'kiblu, right? We're emphasizing that it was truly, truly embraced. And of course, Chazal blow this up into, right, a kimu v'kiblu, not just of the day of Purim, but it was a kimu v'kiblu of all of Torah, right? That this is the Gemara and Shabbos, right? This is the kind of rectification of Har Sinai, right? Har Sinai, Chazal say, Kaf Aleihem Har Kegigas, Hashem holds the mountain, you know, mountain over them like a barrel. Whether you understand that literally, whether you understand it in the sense of, right, you could understand it as you could understand it in a literal shot, right, that Hashem, okay, lifted up Har Sinai. You could also understand easily that it means, in the context of being in the desert, there's no realistic way that Bnei Yisrael could say no, because they don't really have any choice. You could also understand that in the immediate aftermath of the dizzying miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was no realistic way for Bnei Yisrael to say no, right? I mean, they've just, after experiencing everything they just experienced, Hashem could have said anything. And, you know, we wouldn't say that Bnei Yisrael had free will in the classic philosophical sense of free will. So whichever way it was, Bnei Yisrael did not accept the Torah at Har Sinai with a dry, objective, cool, collected free will, right? There was either direct pressure or there was intense heat of the moment. And like Rav Elchanan even pointed this out. In fact, if you look at, you know, you look at the history of halachic observance and say from, you know, the period of the Shoftim, for sure in the period of Malachim, it's not too pretty, right? Chazal say that the second base of Mikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, but you know why Chazal say the first base of Mikdash was destroyed? Avodah Zarah? Yeah. Yeah, exactly, right? Because the big three are rampant. Then you look at the Nevi'im, and it's clear, right? So halachic observance was leaving a lot to be desired, to put it mildly, during the first Beis HaMikdash period. It was a very intense period of spirituality, right? You see Sefer Malachi, which is really interesting. Sefer Malachi, Avodah Zarah is out the door, but all of a sudden, for the first time, Bnei Yisrael are neglecting the sacrifices. Right, the Nevi'im never had that problem in the first Beis HaMikdash. Everybody was very into the sacrifices. They just went to Avodah Zarah as well. It seems like there's a spiritual decline post the Churban Bayis Rishon, but there is, you know, definitely an increased halachic observance going on. And that seems to be stemming from the turning point of Purim, right? That's the new bris coming out of Purim, right? The idea that we could have a bris in Chutz Laretz, right? Finally shutting down all those who argued that, in Sefer Yecheskel, arguing that the bris is over once we've been thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. That's rejected by Purim. You know, the idea that Torah is something that we just have to have forced down our throats, again, is something rejected by Purim. So Bnei Yisrael come strong out of that. So that's the Bnei Yisrael being proactive and new bris side of Purim. Pesach could be the easiest of the three to prove. There's a couple cool sources I'll show you that I had, and these I can take credit for because I don't think Rav Moshe had these. Focused, and we want to focus on the Dal Kosos per se, right? Because Dal Kosos is the mitzvah that the Gemara is saying has the mitzvah of Pursumi Nisa. So the Yerushalmi gets into what the Dalakosos are established for, why four, and we've got a few different interesting ideas. If I had more time, I would talk about them, but I don't think I do. So we'll just look at the classic one, right? The classic one is that the four Kosos are parallel to the Arba Lashonos of Geula, right? The four languages of redemption that Hashem has in the very beginning of... Do you know where the Arba Lashonos Geula are? Yeah, exactly. Va'era Perek Vav. So this is after the disaster in Parsha Shmos, right? Where Moshe's initial confrontation with Paro ends in total disaster, right? Paro has said no. The slavery has only intensified. Moshe plummets in the polls. So Hashem sends him right back out there. Right, Hashem says, you know, get back. Tell them that, you know, I am revealing my name to you, right? I only talked Bekel Shakai to the Avos. I'm revealing my Yodke Vavke name to you. So this is a real new stage in the relationship. And tell B'nai Yisrael that I took him, I don't know, Hotzeisi Yitzchem Eretz Tivlos Mitzrayim, then the whole thing. All right, we'll read it more carefully in a second. And then B'nai Moshe gets this, you know, inspiring rah-rah message, tells it to B'nai Yisrael, and they tell him, get lost. Right, so we talk very excitedly about the Arba Lashonos Geula. We should just remember what B'nai Yisrael's reaction was to the Arba Lashonos Geula at the time. Right, they said, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. George Bush messed that up also back in the day. I don't know if that's good or bad, but but if you look at the four Lashonos Geula carefully, right? So they have. I will take you out from the tortures of Egypt. It's unpleasant. I'm going to save you. We're being saved from Egypt.
It's more like the work.
Lisbol to your.
Like toils.
Okay, it's unpleasant, right?
You're spoiling my job too.
Okay, are you looking forward to vacation or not? Then v'hitzalti eschem yevo. The sum I will say, right? I think most people translate lehatzil as to save. So we're being saved by God from the slavery. And then v'ga'alti eschem b'zerona tuya. I'm going to redeem you with an outstretched hand. Shvatim gedolim, right? We don't have to translate that now because I don't really know how to translate shvatim gedolim. And then the last one, v'la'kachti eschem lila'am. So if read that carefully, the last of the Arba Lashonos Geula is, I will take you to me to be my nation, and you will have me as your God. So it's interesting, this parenthetically, right, that Hashem emphasizes that there's going to be a dual relationship here, right? I'm going to take you as my nation, but you also, right, why does Hashem have to add, V'hayisi lachem Elohim, right? You've got to step it up as well. And we'll see what B'nai Yisrael do. But the last of Lashonos Geula, V'lakach Yeschem li la'am, so the Sefer HaMichtam, focusing on those four Lashonos Geula and the four Kosos, so he says, if you look at it, Sefer HaMichtam, he's one of the Rishonim from Provence. So he says over here, if you see it, right, so on top of the prior three, Hosif v'higdil, after the first three, right, which all focus on physical salvation, right, being saved from the sivlos, being saved from the slavery, being saved, redeemed. The final one is the spiritual one, right, lakach osanu lo la'am sigula, v'nasan lan netara so'at mima, v'zehu geula acharas gedola mikulan, right? This final language of geula is the greatest of the four. Shezehu lanefesh, v'ashar legufos, right? The final one, the ultimate one, we would say, is for the soul. And the previous three focus on the physical redemption. V'alzeh amar v'lakachti eschem li la'am, right? So in other words, what the Mechtam is pointing out is that the four lashonos of geula and the Dalet Kosos, which are commemorating these, are building up towards what is the real ultimate telos of the redemption, right? What are we really looking forward to? What do we ultimately care about? It's wonderful that we were saved from Mitzrayim, but what we really care about is the fact that Hashem took us la'am segula, right? Again, the fact that there was a krisas bris between Hashem and B'nai Yisrael is really what we're here to celebrate, and that's what the Dalet Kosos are all building up to. That's what we're looking forward to the entire time. Just give me 1 second. Let me remember if there's a... Why did I put the Netziv here? Because it's only a recent find that I had. Okay, then it's not super helpful. He has one interesting point. It just gives you like an interesting perspective on the Dalakosos. I don't know if you got to see. You know, you're looking at your own time. He has an interesting take on the Dalakosos, which partially feeds into the thesis that we're developing. Particularly the end. It's a good one to see. We can skip it for now. Right. So just thinking back for a second, where we are so far is right. We wanted to know why these three miracles as opposed to all other miracles. What makes these three all different? Right. Again, we only have clear evidence in the Gemara and most Mefarshim for Pursumei Nisa being associated with Hanukkah with Ner Hanukkah, Purim with Mikra Megillah, and Pesach with the Dalakosos. The question you want to know is all those other miracles in Tanakh, why don't those have an obligation of Pursumei Nisa, right? Eliyahu, Elisha, why doesn't that have anything? First thing we saw was, you know, one distinction you can start to make in the world of halacha is miracles that affect the majority versus the entirety of the congregation, right? If the miracle affected the majority or entirety of the congregation, it gets the bracha of Sha'as Nisan Lavasin Ramakom Hazeh when you see it. If it's a miracle that only happens to a few individuals, then you make your own personal bracha, but you don't make this special with Shem Umalchus, Sha'as Nisan Lavasin. So that was step one. Then we saw some of the Rishonim making distinctions between miracles which all of Bnei Yisrael were involved in and saved from some outside power, right? There's something special to that. And then we suggest that this is all about the miracles of a Krisas Bris, which requires Hashem to perform a miracle saving us from an outside threat, us responding with our own spiritual step forward, and then a renewal of the relationship following that, which we have with Pesach. Of course, what we did in Pesach, right? You could probably the carbon Pesach, right? We had to take the carbon Pesach in order to be taken out of its Mitzrayim. Purim with the Kiyum of a Kiblu, whether in a narrow sense of the day of Purim, whether in a broader sense of you know, Kol Torah Kula, and Chanukah with Taras HaMikdash and the you know, cleansing and restarting of the sacrificial order. Okay, so that's kind of part one. Part two is the part which is more fun. Because part two is, you know, we're going to try to figure out what, Lamai Nafkamina, what is this, you know, this perspective on Pursumei Nisa, that it's all about, right, a commemoration of the Krisas Bris, the renewal of the Bris that happened between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael through the vehicle of these miracles. So how does that express itself in the performance of the mitzvah, right? Like, we talk about Pursumei Nisa all the time. What difference does it make that there's Pursumei Nisa involved in the Dalakosos versus that there's not? How is this expressing itself halachically? So the thesis, I'll tip my cards early and then I'll try to show them subsequently. The thesis that I'll try to advance is that the Rav always like to make a distinction between what you call the Maisa Mitzvah and the Kiyum HaMitzvah. Right, that you could have cases in halacha try to demonstrate where the act of the mitzvah is X, but the ultimate kiyum of the mitzvah is Y. Right, a classic example could be tefillah. Right, tefillah, the act of the mitzvah is you know, certain things that you're supposed to say, but the kiyum hamitzvah, what you're actually fulfilling, he would always call a kiyum shebalev. Right, the maisa mitzvah, something has to be verbal. If you just think shmona esrei, you haven't fulfilled anything. But the kiyum hamitzvah has to be internal. Right, if you just dryly read the words without thinking them, then you didn't fulfill your mitzvah of tefillah. So I'm going to try to make a similar distinction here. What I'm going to argue is that for Pursumei Nisa, the Maisa Mitzvah falls on the individual, right? Every individual person has to drink his or her four cups of wine. Every individual has to, you know, read or have read for them the Megillah, and every individual has to light or have lit in their house the Chanukiah on Chanukah. So the act of the mitzvah applies to the individuals. However, the Kiyum HaMitzvah, right, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, I want to argue, is a Kiyum HaRabim. The Kiyum has to be done communally. It is the fulfillment of the mitzvah is done by the community. The performance is done by the individuals, but the fulfillment is done by the community as a whole. Now, that would make a lot of sense in theory, given what we just talked about before, because if the whole point of the Pursumei Nisa, of those miracles, is to commemorate and celebrate and thank for the Krisas HaBris between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, right, then you'd think that there should be a Klal Yisrael aspect to these mitzvahs, right? So let's try to prove it. So the easiest proof we kind of already started with, right? We had that Tshuva of the Maharam who was saying, wait a second, right? It's interesting that you have Afen Hayoboso Anes only documented for Pesach, right? Dalakosos, Purim, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah. So let's look at Afen Hayoboso Anes for a second, right? Afen Hayoboso Anes, it comes up in the Gemara in Pesachim, Rabbi Shimon Levi says that women are obligated in the four cups of wine, because Afen Hayoboso Anes, they were also involved in the miracle. So there's a basic machlokas between the Rishonim, right? Two basic understandings of what it means that Afen Hayoboso Anes. One is the majority opinion, and it's the one that's corroborated by the Yerushalmi, and it's the one that works out better for us. So that's great. The one that the minority opinion is the one that's brought in the Rashbam. It's also brought in Rashi here. If you look at the 10th parak of Pesachim, you'll notice that Rashi takes up a very small amount of real estate on the top, and Rashbam takes up a larger amount of real estate on the bottom. So it seems like Rashi, we know, at least some Masechtas, wrote his commentary in drafts, right? So it seems like we, for the 10th parak of Pesachim, we only have a very early draft of Rashi's commentary. Instead, we have the more fleshed out commentary of his grandson, the Rashbam, right? If you ever look in, you open a random page of Bava Basra, where Rashi seems to, Rashi died at Daf Lama Gimel. So for 33 blot, Bava Basra has very normal, manageable sized dapim. All of a sudden you hit Rashbam, and the Gemara goes from this to this, because Rashi was nice and concise, and the Rashbam goes like, three times as long. And that's why Bava Basra is the longest Masechta. It's the longest Masechta just because the Rashbam, cheated with the margins. So Rashbam here, as well as Rashi and Pesachim, problematic. Rashi and Megillah doesn't say this way. Rashi and Megillah says like Tosis, as we'll see in a second. But the Rashbam says, what does it mean, Afayin Hayibosu Anes? What does it mean that the women were involved in the miracle? It means that the women were involved in bringing about the miracle, right? They were involved on the active side. So for Pesach, right, he invokes the Medrash about, right, that Bnei Yisrael were redeemed through the merit of the Nashim Tzidkaniyos, right, the righteous women who got Bnei Yisrael through Mitzrayim, and then with Hanukkah, you invoke Yehudis killing Holofernes, and with Megillah's Esther, most obviously, you've got Esther, right, being the heroine of the story. So that's the Rashbam. Tosos, other Rishonim, the Yerushalmi, all say that Afen Hayoboso Anes doesn't refer to those through whose merit the miracle is brought about. Afen Hayoboso Anes means those who were the beneficiaries of the miracle, right? That even the women were involved, right? Even the women were saved in the miracle. It wasn't just the men who were saved, it was the women who were saved as well. It doesn't have to do with who's bringing the miracle about, right? Oh, it's Moshe, Aaron, and the Neshim Tzidkaniyos. So it was Mordechai and Esther, Yehuda Maccabee and Yehudis. No, it just means that, right, Klal Yisrael was saved from the Nes, and Klal Yisrael means the men. Klal Yisrael means the women, right? Af hein hayu ba'oso sakana, right? They were also in the danger, is the formulation that's used. Right, Tosas quote the Yerushalmi, which says Afen Hayoboso Hasafik. They were also, in the doubt. They were also, not knowing what was going to happen. They were also in danger. So based on that read, though, Tosos asks a pressing question. Tosos asks, wait a second, if the defining requirement for Afen Hayoboso Anes, which again means an exemption from the normal rule of mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, right? Normally, mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, women are pturos. Afen Hayoboso Anes, women are chayavos. Afen Hayoboso Anes means women were the beneficiaries of the miracle. Well, guess what, right? What about our foil, the miracle that we said in the beginning as the foil miracle? What about sukkahs, right? The sukkah, women were the beneficiaries of the sukkahs just as much as the men were. And yet, women are pturos in sukkah. So how do you explain that? So the Rav has a piece on this in the letters between him and his father. there he explains that, right, you have to understand there's a difference between the nature of the miracle. If you look, is only associated with miracles that have presume nisa. There is no presume nisa of sukkah. And he says there that, right, you have mitzvos which are all about, the entire driver of the mitzvah is to celebrate the miracle. And then you have mitzvos that are associated with miracles, but it's not the entire driver of the mitzvah, right? So for example, if you sat in your sukkah for 7 days, and you had in mind, I am fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah, but you never thought for a second about the desert, you would completely fulfill your obligation of sitting in the sukkah, right? You don't need to have in mind the miracle to fulfill the mitzvah. In contrast, when it comes to Chanukah, Megillah, and Pesach, that is not at all the case, right? Think about Rabbi Gamliel, the Seder, right? Kol Shelo Amar Shelo Shadvar Ma'ilu at his Seder didn't fulfill his, Lo Yatza Yedei Chavaso. Knowing why we're here and, connecting the miracles to the mitzvos is, without that, the mitzvos at the Seder night fall apart, right? The mitzvos are totally focused on the nes. So that's how the Rav diffuses the sukkah versus Pesach, Pesach, Purim, Chanukah contradiction that Tosos raised. But he leaves a question open, which is very nice. But why, right? Like, why does it have to be that way? Like, at the end of the day, the women were involved in sukkah. The women were involved in Pesach. You could tell me, well, here the mitzvah is all about the nes, and here the mitzvah is not all about the nes. True, but why not? Why is there no persume nisa for sukkahs? The Rav proved that there is no persume nisa for sukkahs. The Rav left for us to prove, to explain, why there's no persume nisa for sukkahs, why there is persume nisa for Pesach, right? So, falling back on what we had before, right, we had the answer to that question. We said, well, sukkah is different, because that wasn't a case of a threat from the outside, Hashem saving us responding. There was no, we didn't respond to Nesa Sukkah, right? We sat in the sukkahs and complained for 40 years, right? There was no proactive response on our side. There's no new bris going on. So we understand why Sukkahs doesn't have Pursumi Nisa. There was no new bris at the time. However, the other thing to point out, and this is really important, this is probably the best, the critical idea, is that if Pursumi Nisa is a communal kiyum, right? A kiyum derabim. The fulfillment of the mitzvah is not done by individuals. The fulfillment is done by the community. Then the idea is going to be, if anybody from the community is not fulfilling the mitzvah, then by definition, that limits the communal kiyum, right? Anybody, if the community has to fulfill the mitzvah, then the community has to fulfill the mitzvah. So by definition, afen ha'boso anis, right? Like, they sound similar. Why? Where is this halacha coming from? Why is it that just because the women were involved in the miracle, women were saved by the miracle, means that they have to perform the mitzvah? The answer could be that's exactly the point. If the mitzvah is to commemorate the bris between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, and therefore there has to be a communal fulfillment, a communal fulfillment means women. And we can prove this by answering a question from somewhere else, right? When I was in Gush, so any of you know Rav Donnie Wolf. So Rav Donnie Wolf asked, he was driven crazy by this Rambam that I've got right after these Gemaras, right? This Rambam in Beis HaBachira. The Rambam is talking about the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam thinks that the third Beis HaMikdash will be built naturally. And it's a Rambam where the contradiction in the halacha itself jumps off the page, right? The first half of the halacha, the Rambam says, Ein bonin es hamikdash balayla shenemar uvyom hekim es hamishkan bayom hakimin velo balayla. Right, so the Beis Hamikdash can only be built during the day. The time for the mitzvah building Beis Hamikdash is daytime. Great. And then what does Rambam say in the second half of the halacha? Anashim v'nashim ve'akol chayavin livnos l'sei batzman ubimonam anashim v'nashim kemikdash hamidbar. Everybody is obligated to either build or support financially, right, in some way or another, assist in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Men, women, everybody has to be involved. Just like in the Mishkan, where the men and the women were both involved in the cause of the Mishkan. But the contradiction jumps off the page, right? First half of the halacha, the Rambam was saying, mitzvah saseh that only applies in the daytime. Well, we know mitzvah saseh only applies in the daytime. It means it's a mitzvah saseh, she'hazman, grama, right? That's tefillin. So how is Rambam saying that that the mitzvah only applies during the day, and yet the chiyuv applies both on men and on women? By the way, we could throw in another question, which is the Rambam formulates it a little bit strangely, right? The Rambam says v'hakol chayavin ... anashim v'nashim. Everybody is obligated, men and women. So the bigger question is, why on earth are women chayav? The second question is, why did the Rambam write everybody's chayav, men and women? Just write, men and women are chayav, right? You don't have to do both. So the answer seems to be, this is the exact point. The answer is really, really simple. Building Beis HaMikdash is one of the three mitzvos, which when Bnei Yisrael enter Eretz Yisrael, we're told, right, the Gemara says that there are three mitzvos that were placed on Am Yisrael as a tzibor, right? The tzibor was given the obligation to wipe out Amalek, set up a king, and build a Beis HaMikdash. Well, guess what? All three of those, men and women are chayavin, all three of those are national mitzvos, right? The idea here seems to just be very simply, when you have a mitzvah which is chal, not on the yachid, but it is chal on the tzibor, being chal on the tzibor means, by definition, being chal both on men and women, even though in normal circumstances you would say it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Mitzvah saseh shazman grama is not relevant if we're dealing with a public mitzvah, because public, again, means everybody. And that's exactly why the Rambam emphasizes, right? Hakol chayavin anashim v'nashim. So too, we can say that's exactly what's going on with Pursumi Nisa, and that's why it's no coincidence that the Gemara says, afan ha'yabaso anis, for Dalal Kosos, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah. Yeah.
I want to tell us for a second. What's the chiluk din d'oraisa and the Rabbanan then? That he suggests between Dalal Kosos and Sukkah. The same question, as in Tosa asked the question as to what's the difference between Dalal Kosos, where we say Avinu Zonis, or all those mitzvot, and why we don't say it by Sukkah.
Uh-huh.
And his answer is, one is the right, one is the Rabbanan. And that the right, I guess they can't, and I say the right that they couldn't, but the Rabbanan, technically, I'm not sure, Kiman Shiba Zonis.
Right, so that's how they answer.
How does that relate? That there's this different answer, the right versus the Rabbanan?
That's a different answer. I mean, like, the Rav. So that answer, two things. One, the Rav doesn't like the answer because the Rav doesn't like the question. The Rav says their question doesn't get off the ground, right? You have to understand that Sukkah just isn't a mitzvah about the nes. So you don't get to their answer if you've already short-circuited the question. Two is that, right, then Tosfos have to make the assumption that there's no concept of Afen Ha'yuboso Anes on a Do'oraisa level, which is problematic because there's solid evidence for Afen Ha'yuboso Anes and even Bersumi Nisa in the mitzvah d'oraisa of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is of course a mitzvah mid'oraisa. If you want, Roy Willig actually has an article in Zichron HaRav, which was the big black book they put out after the Rav passed away. So he has an article on Pursumi Nisa. He has a couple pages where he proves that that Pursumi Nisa mid'oraisa Afin Hayo, the whole thing is going on in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Tosos goes against that as well. So it doesn't bother me so much. You're right. I guess we can put on the record that Tosos' answer doesn't go with this, but that's fine. So proof number one we've got. Again, we're trying to prove that Pursumi Nisa is a kiyum of the Rabbim, and we're saying that's because Pursumi Nisa is all about miracles, which were a bris between Hashem and the Rabbim. And proof number one is the obligation of women, even though it's a mitzvah saseh, shazman grama. So proof number two is normally in halacha, right? When women are exempted, so who gets exempted along with them? Yeah, avadim, exactly. So what's the status of avadim when it comes to the Pursumi Nisa mitzvos? So I kind of gave a bit of a slanted, I gave one side, right? There are two positions in Psak, the position of the Shulchan Aruch, the position of the Gra, the position of probably most people, and what clearly seems to be the consistent position of the Rambam is that Avadim Kananim are pater in Dalet Kosos, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah. In other words, the exemption of Afen Ha'yuboso Anis does not apply to avadim. So that's interesting, because usually nashim and avadim go together on a, you know, when it comes to being obligated to mitzvos. So there's a griz. There's a griz in Erechin who has a chakira on this, right? I'll tell you the chakira, and then I'll argue that we can kind of undercut it. The griz says, okay, so let's see. We have a normal rule in halacha, right? The mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, women are pater. So the griz chakira is, how does afen ha'ibos ha'anes work? Does afen ha'ibos ha'anes mean that we've eliminated mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, right? That we've eliminated the exemption? Or I have the exemption of mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, and then along on top of that comes afen ha'ibos ha'anes, and afen ha'ibos ha'anes, you know, kind of restores the obligation of those who had it taken out by mitzvah saseh she'azman grama. Right? So you understand the two options here? One is we're just, okay, so I have a patur. Mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, women are paturos. What does afen ha'ibos ha'anes do? Does it say, you know, There's no mitzvah saseh she'azman grama rule in this mitzvah? Or does it say, no, there is a rule of mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, and that p'tur exists, but there's a new chiyuv of afen ha'ibos ha'anes, right? So, you know, are we kind of, yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think of an analogy. In other words, right, so like I have a room, right, and mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, right, so I close the door. So I could look at afen ha'ibos ha'anes as reopening the door, or I could look at afen ha'ibos ha'anes as keeping the door closed, but, you know, opening a different door, right? So the Gris says, now, what's going to be the nafkamina of my chakira? Nafkamina, my chakira is going to be avadim, right? Because avadim presumably were not afen ha'ibos ha'anes, right? The Jews didn't have any avadim in Mitzrayim. And in Purim, right? So what is Haman says shalom lavos, and the shalom lavos, that's going to be the avadim, right? So they're going to be plundered; they're not going to be killed. So says the Griz, right? If afen ha'ibos ha'anes is removing mitzvah saseh she'azman grama, then it will. There's no p'tur, and therefore avadim are chayiv, just as women are chayiv. If afen ha'ibos ha'anes is a new halacha, right, that, you know, the p'tur of mitzvah saseh she'azman grama is there, but afen hayu makes them chayiv, then afen hayu is only going to make the women chayiv. It's not going to make the avadim chayiv. Does that make sense? If not, tell me. Okay. But based on the
concept, it's so obvious that what? Avadim don't have a concept of afen hayu be'ot ha'anes.
In two of the three miracles, it's obvious that they were not in the miracle.
Wait, just because they weren't there, like, there were no avadim present, doesn't mean that they wouldn't be involved in the miracle, and that...
They weren't saved.
Man, we were all avadim, theoretically, like, that's...
Avadim...
I mean,
Kananim were saved, in the miracles of Purim and Pesach.
I mean, they would have been killed had they existed, like, I mean, either way, they would have...
But hypotheticals don't matter, practically speaking, right? There's a very, very practical halacha.
But halachically speaking, when we talk about rules for avadim, we talk about other sakes of nisim, for bikurim, stuff like that.
Yeah.
We do take into account the fact that, oh, hypotheticals, like, had you been there? And then, like, for bikurim, we'll have, like, lashonos. Like, and then you can't say lavotena, maybe, but you still say bikurim, and you still reference Yisrael Mitzrayim. Yisrael Mitzrayim is still a significant national event, even if you physically, or your you know, ancestors weren't there, and once you become part of the nation,
so your
ancestors become part of the thing. Gerim say, like, do these things. You know, what about Gerim? Gerim also, like, you weren't there because you just became a Ger now.
But a Ger, the whole point of a Ger, you become part of Klal Yisrael. So
Avadim also, some ways, Avadim.
In other words, incorrect. A Ger. If a Ger is now a full fledged Yisrael, right? So now he's a full fledged Yisrael. Had he been in Mitzrayim at the time, he would have been under the same duress. I take you in your current state, and that's what afen hayu means. I take you in your current state, I put that, what it would have been there, would you have been in trouble or not? If you would have been in trouble, then you are often hypothesis, literally.
Yeah, but your argument is there's no theoretical. So I'm saying there were no Gerim at the time in Mitzrayim. There only
if you were the slave of a Jew in Egypt, then you would
We would have been saved. Why not?
Yeah, you wouldn't have been.
What
difference would your life have been?
I mean, you would have been part of.
I can say differently. There's no. You know, if I'm a Yisrael, I can put myself in the category of Yisraelim in Mitzrayim. If I'm an Eved, I can't put myself in the category of Avadim in Mitzrayim because they weren't there.
You have some status of Yisrael once you become an Eved. Like, you're now Chayv in some mitzvot. You are partially part
but
of
there were,
becoming an Eved Kanani that you have some mitzvot. You have some type of Tevila, some type of Geirus.
In other words,
partial Geirus.
Let's reduct you ad absurdum for a second, right? Because I'm giving a different answer. Let's imagine a world where there were no women in Egypt, right? Imagine what? Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you guys are all like Sheva Levi, right? The women are all smart enough, and they figured out that they saw through Paro's plan. So the women are you know, they're just not enslaved. The men are enslaved, right? We fell for Paro's trick. So if that was the case, then we would not be able to say Afen Ha'ubos Soanes nowadays, right?
No, but Shevet Levi was redeemed too, even though they weren't slaves. So, anyone who left with them was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to focus on the
example. Okay, fine. So let's go back to let's go back to imagining that there were no women in Egypt at all, right? The women didn't exist. I was thinking the same thing. I wasn't going to say it. right. So they've been airbrushed. So now, right. You could.
Well, no, because the women are included within the category of the men. And in Bishpacha magazine,
no, incorrect.
Women are part of men. You just don't see them.
Incorrect.
But they're part of that.
Okay. Fine.
I think it's literally the same thing. I don't take the example too seriously, but like, same thing. As in, yes, like, there weren't avadim, but like,
you wouldn't say Afen Rosso and Ace, but they weren't. My category was not in the.
And neither were Gerim.
In the miracle.
And neither were Gerim.
But Gerim were, because Gerim are Yisraelim. First of all, I mean, yeah, Gerim are Yisraelim. What differences in terms of mitzvah obligation does a ger have from a yisrael?
What difference in mitzvah obligation does an eved have from a woman?
So that's exactly that's exactly what we're focusing on, right?
That's what's bothering the grizz.
The grizz is being bothered by the fact that there's none. Okay, no, but you can't compare. Fine. So anyway, the Grizz has this. Go back to Ari Rosenzweig's year, okay? The Grizz. What?
What'd you say?
I said go back to Ari Rosenzweig's year.
All right.
The Grizz has that Hakir that he sets up. That's how he's trying to explain why Avadim would be Pater, right? But we could give a much simpler explanation based on what we've been saying up until now. If we're saying Afen Evasanes means this is a public kiyum celebrating the bris between Hashem and the Yisrael and those who were saved. So then, no, you could just say Afen Evasanes. There is no mitzvah. Mitzvah saseh shazman grama could exist, cannot exist, doesn't matter. Avadim are pturim, nashim are chayavos, just simply because Nashim were in the miracle, and Nashim were part of the nation, and the Avadim were not. The fact that the Nashim, right, again, you highlight the Megillah, right, Taf and Nashim, etc., and then Ushlalom Lavos. So those who were involved are part of the nation that have to be commemorating this. Those who are not involved are not part of the nation at all to the same degree, right? You can't compare both on a spiritual and national level, right? You can't compare Nashim to Avadim on either one of those planes remotely. Right, so Mamela will say that according to the construct we've set up, that Avadim should be Petur. Because the same reason why women are Chayavos, namely they're part of the nation that was saved, is the exact reason why Avadim are not. Right? We won't have to get any pilpul about, you know, mitzvah sasheh shazman grama, afein hayu, how does the Petur work, blah blah blah. No, the point is the whole focus of the Machayev is on the Am, and the Am means, right, the Bnei Chorin, and not the Avadim. There's no question, right? When it comes to Kedushas Yisrael, an Eved is not a full-fledged Jew. He's not a full-fledged part of the nation spiritually. He's not a full-fledged part of the nation politically, right? And therefore, he doesn't register on this Kiyum HaRabim. Okay, so that's proof number two. Any questions or objections to proof number two? Other than you. Any new objections to
prove
that?
But my objection is more with the grids, not with your range.
So okay, that's great. I don't care about the grids. I care about the grids. I like the grids.
You're
sending
back to Roosevelt because of the grids.
Well, if you're willing to forego on the grids, then you don't have to go back to Roosevelt. You should go back to him, but you could stay here until we're done. Okay, so we've got two more proofs. Proof number three is, right, so who's another group of people who are normally patur from mitzvos? Ketanim. Ketanim. So is it a coincidence that we consistently see a strain that tries to be Machayev Ketanim in the mitzvos of Pursumei Nisa? I didn't quote it on here because it's obscure. You should just know there's the Baal Halachos Gedolos thinks that Ketanim could light the Chanukah, could light the Chanukiah, and they could be motzi the house. Right? So that sheet is out there. The Ketanim can motzi everybody for Ner Chanukah. When it comes to Pesach, to Dal Kosos and Megillah, so here you've got already evidence in the Gemara itself. For Dal Kosos, so I just quoted a snippet of the Gemara. The Gemara says, right, Kuf Chasim Abayis, Tanur Rabbanan, last word on the first line, Tanur Rabbanan, Hakol Chavim Abar Kosos Halalu Echad Anashim Echad Anashim VeEchad Tinokos, right? So that's weird. So the Tanur Rabbanan think that the children are obligated to drink four cups of wine. Am Rabbi Huda, v'chimatzo elaseisha tinokos b'yayin, right? What benefit do little kids get from drinking wine? Rather, you should give out candy. Okay, so, you know, we can get into how exactly Rishon have different understandings of that, but at least, again, keeping things to a simple level, we see, right, a certain obligation for Ketanim to keep the alkosos. That's and seemingly Rabbi Huda doesn't argue so badly. Rabbi Huda's argument was Matuela Seisha Tinokos. He doesn't say, what are you talking about? Ketanim aren't obligated mitzvos. He says, right, yeah, you know, there's no chirus for a little, you know, 6-year-old to have four cups of wine, right? And then look at the Mishnah and Megillah. Hakol Ksher and Likra Osesa Megillah. Chutz Me Chere Shotav Akatan. Everyone's allowed to read from the Megillah except for Chere Shotav Akatan, right? That's our power three, the classic trio who are Pater and Mitzvos. Rabbi Huda Mach Shir Be Akatan, right? Rabbi Huda has this shocking position. Rabbi Huda thinks that a Katan could read from the Megillah. So, how on earth is that possible? So, there are two basic answers in the Rishonim for how the Katan could read the Megillah. Tosos think that this is a function of the mitzvah of chinuch. There's a basic machlokas yishna about the mitzvah of chinuch, right? The obligation to educate the kids. Does the mitzvah of chinuch create an obligation on the child, or does the mitzvah of chinuch create an obligation on the father? So Tosos believe that the mitzvah of chinuch creates an obligation on the child. So the machlokas in the Mishnah is as follows. Now, obviously, even if there's a mitzvah on the child of chinuch, that mitzvah is only going to be on what level? Derabanan, right? There's definitely no mitzvah midoraisa. But according to Tosos, midorabanan, children of a certain age have an obligation of mitzvos. It's called the mitzvah of chinuch. So now you have an interesting situation. The mitzvah of Megillah is an obligation midorabanan as well. So when everybody's obligation in the first place is derabanan, do we say kids are derabanan, adults are derabanan, therefore kids can be motzi adults? That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim say, no, you can't compare the two, because the kid has a double derabanan, right? Adults have a single derabanan of Megillah. The kid has both derabanan of Megillah and derabanan of Chinuch, right? So can someone with a double derabanan be motzi someone with a single derabanan? That's how Tosfos understood the Machlokas. The reason why you wouldn't like what Tosfos have to say is if you had a gut instinct that chinuch doesn't create an obligation on kids. Chinuch is all about the obligation on parents, right? Kids are free riders in halacha. They have no responsibilities. It means that the parents are obligated to instruct and teach them in the mitzvos. Right? Well, once that's the case, if chinuch is only an obligation on the parents, then again, how on earth could Rabbi Yehuda possibly allow a child to be motzi adults in the mitzvah of reading the Megillah? So what does the Ramban have to say about this? So the Ramban says you could just look at the underline that I got, right? This first underline on the second line of the Ran al Harif, Ran al Harif quoting the Ramban. And he says, Rabbi Huda atzmo lo hitir bekatan, but ela b'megillah. Right? Rabbi Huda, in general, is anti-katan, right? We're not creating any new massive obligations for katanim. There is a unique requirement, a unique ability for the katan to be motzi you in Megillah. Why? Mipnei shekulam hayubo sohani. Since everybody was involved in the miracle, therefore the katan can be motzi you, your Megillah. And the Ran says, I don't know what he's talking about. Right, the Ran says, "V'lo nichali b'hai peruka." I don't like the Ramban's answer. D'ihu lav bar chiyuva hu b'mitzvos afilu midrabanan. If we're going to say that ketanim are never obligated in mitzvos, we rejected Tosos. We say there's no obligation of chinuch. You can't talk about ketanim being chayiv. That's the Ramban's whole thesis. The Ramban's whole thesis is that ketanim are pater from mitzvos. Ki havi ba'oso hanis my hava. What do I care if they're involved in the mitzvah? If I have a core principle that ketanim are pater and mitzvos, what do I care if they're in the miracle? What do I care if they weren't in the miracle? They're ketanim, they're pater. There's nothing more to talk about. So therefore, the Ran rejects the Ramban, and the Ran goes back to Tosfos. But given the construct we've set up, we can explain the Ramban very, very well, right? What's our answer going to be? The Ran is saying, ki havu ba'oso anes mai hava. What do I care if they were in the miracle? We're going to say that's the exact point, right? If the exact point is afin haboso anes means that it's a kiyum derabim of the entire nation, right, commemorating the bris that we had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Well, guess what, right? Go back to the Pasuk in Megillah. The Pasuk in Megillah said, taf v'nashim, right? The taf were under threat, and the taf were saved just as much as the women, just as much as the men. And that could be exactly what the Ramban's point is, right? The Ramban says, no, yeah, normally ketanim are pater, but here they were also in the miracle. These mitzvos are all about the entire nation celebrating the miracle. That means the men, that means the women, and that means the children. And then the Chacham could argue for one of two interesting ways. The Chacham could argue because they could just say, you know, your alumnus is very nice, but we just have an ironclad rule that ketanim are always pater. So even though they were definitely afen hayaboso anes, we don't care, right? Ketanim are pater, ketanim are pater, ketanim are pater. Or what really interesting would be is we could say, remember we were talking in the beginning about the idea of not just Hashem doing the nes for us, but also the fact that there had to be a proactive side on the Klai Yisrael point, right? Well, guess what? Who's doing the kimu v'kiblu in Esther, right? The parents, right? The mother and father said, we're going to keep Purim. We're going to tell the kids they got to come with us to hear the Megillah.
How do you know? Maybe the kids are...
I'm assuming. The kids are saying mazos, and the adults are the ones who are actually the ones who are... Because they don't have das. I think that's eminently reasonable. But anyway, this is all going to explain why the Ramban is saying that potentially Ketanim could have a Chiyuv, which again, we're seeing not just in Megillah, we're seeing in Chanukah, and we're seeing in Dalakosos. In fact, just go back for one quick second to that Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBachira, right, the one about the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and look at the very last line of it, right, after the Rambam had said with all that fanfare that everyone is obligated to help build the Beis HaMikdash, right, Hakol Chayavin, Anashim, v'nashim, just like Mikdash Midbar. What's the last line that the Rambam says? He says, "In vatlan tinoko shel beis rabin lebinyan." Right. However, we do not make the little kids leave the Beis Medrash, right? Leave Cheder to go build the Beis Hamikdash. Now, that's a line in the Gemara. Reish Lakish says it, but that line from Reish Lakish could have easily been dismissed as like a nice agadic statement, right? Oh, right. Kids learning Torah is so important that we're not going to make them go away from their Cheder to go help out building the Beis Hamikdash, right? But the Rambam takes it very seriously. The Rambam records it as a halachic point that we do not prevent the kids, we don't take the kids out of school to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now, why does that have to be there as a halachic point? Kids have no obligation in mitzvos, right? Why would I have a havamina? And why do I need to resort to, oh, we can't, right? Aim of valentinokel shel beis rabban, right? The prime value is that we can't end, you know, little kids learning Torah. We should just say, I don't understand, kids don't have any mitzvah at all. There should be no pressure. There should be no pressure of beis hamikdash to need this counter pressure of taking kids out of school. So again, the answer could be very simple. if the building of the Mikdash, we know, is a mitzvah of the rabbin, right? It's a mitzvah of the public, mitzvah of the community. Therefore, that could have included the children as well, and that's why I need to have this special, out of excuse, you could say, right? It's an excuse to keep the kids in school, as opposed to an excuse to keep the kids out of school, that no matter what, even though Ketanim theoretically should be connected to the mitzvah of building Mitzvah Mikdash, we don't take them out of school. Okay, so that's three, right? So the chiyuv of nashim is one proof for what we want to say. The contrasting patur of avadim is another proof we want to say, and the evidence around there about the possible chiyuv of ketanim is proof number three. There's one proof that I'll let go of, and let's just do proof number four, right? So let's look at the last two sources on the sheet. One is the first mishnah in the 10th parak, and part of the first mishnah, the 10th parak, talks about the poor, right? The second line of the Mishnah says, "Afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyesev." Right? Even the poorest Jew in Israel should not eat unless he's reclining. Right? Even though there's no real derecheres for him, you think, because he's dirt poor. Nonetheless, he still needs to recline. Velo yifchatu lo me'arba kosel shel yayin, right? They should make sure he has at least four cups of wine. The afilu min hatamchoy. The Mishnah rules that we can and we must give the ani four cups of wine, even from the charitable the resources of charity. So asks the Gemara, right? We can just read the Gemara, and the proof of what we want to say will jump out. Gemara asks pshita. This isn't obvious. Like, what do we have against the poor? Like, tzedaka, where, Judaism is pro tzedaka. Why does the Mishnah have to tell me that that tzedaka supports dalakosos? Right, would I have an idea that all the Pesach appeals that you get in the mail are aser, right? Chas v'shalom. So the Gemara says, no. Lo nitzucha el afil Rabbi Akiva. I need this line in the Mishnah because of the position of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a well-known position. To Amar, ase shabbas chachol, so Rabbi Akiva says, when it comes to buying your food for Shabbos, better that you have a very humble weekday meal, right? Make your Shabbos into a weekday rather than make yourself reliant upon the community, right? You should, rather than take food from tzedakah for Shabbos, you should make your Shabbos into weekday food. We know from Rabbi Akiva's economic history that he was not saying this as theory, right? That he lived this in practice. But anyway, continues the Gemara, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who thinks that you should make your Shabbos into weekday rather than take from tzedakah, hacha mishum persume nisa modi. Rabbi Akiva admits that because of persume nisa, the poor should take from tzedakah for the four cups of wine. You look in the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah, and the Rambam says the same thing by oil for Chanukah candles. So, two questions. Question number one is, like, we could ask a Kal v'chomer question, right? Shabbos is a big mitzvah midaraisa. Persume nisa, dalakosos, ner chanukah, these are mitzvahs midarabanan. So why is the ani taking from tzedakah for the mitzvah midarabanan, and the ani is not taking from tzedakah for the mitzvah midaraisa? Question number two, right, how does the answer the question? Because of persume nisa, the ani takes from tzedakah. What does that do with anything? What does persume nisa do with anything? Right, unless you want to tell me that persume nisa makes it an important mitzvah, but that makes no sense because as important as persume nisa makes the mitzvah, Shabbos is a more important mitzvah than other mitzvahs. It has to be that for some reason persume nisa inherently makes you makes the ani obligated even to the point of taking from tzedakah. Again, though, the proof is very very clear for what we want to say. If persume nisa, the whole point is that it's a kiyum harabim, it's a communal it's a communal fulfillment, right? Then if individuals of the community are not fulfilling their mitzvah, then that is a defect in the fulfillment of the community, right? We all here could be drinking our four cups of wine as individuals. If you don't have a full communal observance of the mitzvah, then we here in this room also did not fulfill our mitzvah to the degree necessary. And that's because even though the Maisa mitzvah is individual, the Kiyum HaMitzvah is communal. So the reason why the Ani is taking from the tzedakah then is not because of his mitzvah, it's because of ours, right? That's exactly why, and you look back at the Mishnah, right? Lo yifchatu lo midal arba kosos. The stress is on us. We should make sure that he has at least four cups of wine. And we're going to say that's because when it comes to Shabbos, there's no question Shabbos as a mitzvah is more important than dalakosos, right? But when it comes to responsibilities of charity, responsibilities of the community, so the ani is an individual, right? And he can't, the ani has no right to sue tzedaka for his Shabbos, right? Should we give the ani, right? So should tzedaka support the ani on Shabbos? No question. But does the ani have the right to sue tzedaka for his Shabbos meals? No, he does not, right? That, at least according to Rabbi Akiva, right? Rabbi Akiva's position is that the ani can't sue tzedaka for Shabbos. However, the ani can sue tzedaka for dalakosos, and that's because he's not in it only for himself, but it's reflecting and part of the obligation of everybody, right? It's the common obligation. If he's not fulfilling his mitzvah, then the rest of the community is not fully fulfilling theirs, right? So all four of these examples seem to be pointing in the same direction. Presuminisa being a filament of the community, the argument we had, this is all because Presuminisa in the first place is documenting miracles, which are about a bris between Hashem and the community. And Talia, what's your question?
I'm sorry if you said this earlier and I missed it, but what is it about the four cups specifically that makes it a communal mitzvah, like out of all the obligations of Pesach?
It's a great question. Why do we say there's presumi nisa for dalakosos and we don't say, is part of what we were talking about before. If you, right, like if Rabbi Willig is correct, if you have presumi nisa for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, then that reduces some of the pressure. Otherwise, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why we would have presumi nisa. People debate. Why would we have presumi nisa in dalakosos and not in matzah? I don't know.
The first three proofs, I think I got the fourth one, but the first three proofs, how does that prove that there's a kiyum on the rabbim, as in rabbim sort of has the word community, and there's communal responsibility, so to speak, and not simply that the chiyuv of the mitzvah applies to everyone, but even as yechidim? And then why can't you just say simpler, or alternatively, that the mitzvah everybody in the community is obligated, but as yechidim? Just everybody, with everybody, every person as a yachid was at the neis, even avadim, or not avadim, but even ketanim, even nashim. But there's no communal aspect to that. Why do you, besides the ani case, which even there you don't have to argue that way. I just get why. You know.
Theoretically, you could. First of all, there's no question that ani is the best proof of the four because of the exact question that you're asking.
Although even the ani could say just because he is a personal chiyuv, but I get the point of the tzedakah. Okay, I get the point of the tzedakah.
Yeah, right. Ketanim, I think, comes in second place because. Right? How could we have? That's exactly the Ron's kash on the Ramban, right? Is like the Ramban. You're making. But the Ramban's making a living off of the claim that Tosfos are wrong and Ketanim can't have an obligation in Mitzvos. So what you kind of want to do is explain that you have a bunch of rules that are being broken, right? Normally we say Mitzvos Sashay Shazman Grama. Normally we say that Nashim and Avadim go together. Normally we say the Ketanim are Pater. So if I have a bunch of rules that seem to be broken, so I would like to solve this with like one concept that explains all of them.
And isn't one concept that solves all of them that everyone was saved and therefore everyone has a Chiyuv?
No, because I still need a model to explain to me how they're obligated. If I can prove that a Kiyum HaRabim... if I can prove that a Kiyum HaRabim, just those rules don't apply to a public Kiyum, which is why I keep on stressing building Beis HaMikdash, because that's my prime proof, then I no longer have to resist. In other words, I no longer have to run over, you know, all these normal rules, but in the face of, we want everybody to be obligated, so we'll make everybody obligated and just destroy those other rules. I want to say, no, you have to look at a different paradigm, right? All those rules deal with a mitzvah of the Yachid. But a mitzvah of the Rabbim, by definition, doesn't have those exemptions. Rabbim, by definition, doesn't have men, women, avadim, ketanim, whatever. It's Rabbim as a category.
Okay.
So it just more neatly answers the question. And then ketanim I think, proves it, and Ani, I think, like, proves it with a capital V. But yeah, the Dalakosis question is still bothering me. I don't know. The other question you could ask, by the way, is, right, the idea of publicizing the miracle. We have to change our definition of publicizing, because, like, near Hanukkah, we put it in the window, right, but who are we, what publicizing is going on? The idea seems to be we're publicizing it to the kids at the, like, it's, they're presuming Jesus seems to be to the kids at the table, which is interesting, but I'm not sure what to do with that at this point. Food for thought.
If you have four koso by yourself, are you Makai?
Yeah.
No, it's not presuming Jesus to the kids.
It's not.
Rabbi Yehuda.
What's that? Yeah. No, these are your questions. A good point. Your question's a good point. So I guess presuming Nisa to whoever you've got there. Presuming Nisa to your group. Like just like Sipra Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you say it to yourself if you're by yourself. So mm-hmm. Presuming Nisa to yourself. Interesting. I'm not sure what to do with that.
Right.
Like the differences between you can get into the presuming Nisa of Hanukkah versus the presuming Nisa of Purim. I'm just trying to treat at a global level. Okay.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.